Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
I want to start with some retractions of misprints. Sometimes people print stuff and it's in error and they print a retraction after the fact. And I want to start with this one, okay? Important notice. If you are one of hundreds of parachuting enthusiasts who bought our easy skydiving book, please make the following correction. On page 8, line 7, the words state zip code should have read pull ripcord. Here's another one. It was incorrectly reported last Friday that today is T-shirt Appreciation Day. In fact, it is actually Teacher Appreciation Day. And the last one, I think, is my favorite. In one edition of today's food section, an inaccurate number of jalapeno peppers was given for Jeanette Crowley's Southwestern Chicken Salad recipe. The recipe should call for 2, not 21 jalapeno peppers. I do want to extend a welcome to everybody who has come to join us today, whether you're part of our regular family of followers of Jesus here at Crosslands Church, or if you're visiting or got coerced here by a friend or something. We'd love to connect with you. If you want to fill out one of those Get Connected cards, it's the easiest way for us to do that. And we also, on a weekly basis, we want to share for everybody here the next steps you can take in your journey with us as a family. And today, I want to highlight, we highlighted this one last week, I'm going to highlight it again today, is our giving options. Generosity is an important part of being a follower of Jesus. It's an important part of being a human. And it's kind of in contrast to a lot of the messages we have in our culture. And I believe at Crosslands Church that the mission that God has called us to is one that is worth giving to. God promises when we're generous to him and his purpose, he returns that generosity to us in all kinds of ways. And we have all kinds of means to give here at Crosslands Church. If you want to know more, you can find it on crosslands.live. There's some of the options there. If you want more information at the information desk, they can help you as well. And we try to be as transparent as we can about our finances here. If you want to find out more information, you can call, email, or you can go on to crosslands.ca/partnership, and all of our financial information is there for your scrutiny or whatever. So that's it for that. We're going to be continuing our cross series this morning. And the message is entitled Instead Of. Now, I want to kind of deal with answering a basic question of what it means to be human. We're doing this series that looks at the meaning of the crucifixion from all different kinds of angles. And we're going to be continuing to deal with this next week and beyond, because there's just so much to unwrap in there. You're going to hear some kind of overlapping, but every message is going to have its own focus and bent. If you want to have more, if you go into crosslands.live, there's a box on there that says Sunday message. There's application questions. Okay, how do I actually apply this on a Monday to Saturday basis? And people can do this individually or with family or with a small group or something. And you know, following Jesus is more than a 1 hour on Sunday thing. And so we just want to make that available to people. And then we should have time at the end to entertain text messages. My number will be up on the screen. If you have a comment or question relevant to the message today, we'll try to deal with those in the service, and I'll try not to forget like I did in the first service. So, I'm only human. You think about those retractions that were printed. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, right? And we see this as a kind of a basic idea of what it means to be human. To be human is to be flawed. To be human is to have weaknesses, and some of those weaknesses we tolerate. You know, some people have a weakness towards desserts, and so we want to accommodate that with our dessert auction coming up. And so there are things, you know, some people have caffeine addiction or whatever. We go, yeah, okay, that's permissible. You know, other addictions less so. Chemicals that might be stronger than that are more harmful. Somebody addicted to murder, we don't look highly on that. But we understand that everybody makes mistakes. And we have a lot of patience for that because that's what it means to be human. We don't have patience for that when a bridge collapses or a plane crashes. Those mistakes aren't acceptable. And so there's a line there somewhere between understanding our frailty and weakness and where it goes beyond a line, where it costs too many other people. Being human doesn't cut it there. I think of the words, the SPCA used to be called the Humane Society. And the understanding there is to be humane, at its root, is to be human, and that's understood to be compassionate and kind and caring and all of that. And yet there's way too many examples in the world of people being inhuman, being cruel and malicious and violent. And I saw recently somebody posted something about a recent massacre and said, never again. And it seems like we're just, every 10 years, we're saying never again, all over again. Because there's something that's also within us that has the propensity to be inhuman. We like to think that that's true of other people, but the reality is that core vulnerability and frailty that we all carry can very easily lead to a murderous intent. I think most of us might, at time to time, we think that in our minds, but our society prevents us from acting it out. And I think that's one of the roles of culture and society, that we don't have room to give vent to the worst of what it means to be us. There are exceptions to that, because sometimes when we're isolated behind closed doors or behind glass, we kind of do. That's where road rage comes from. It starts with talking to somebody else. Oh, sure, welcome to my lane. Yeah, okay, if you insist. They can't hear you, but you're still talking to them as if they can hear you. And that can get worse. That can escalate. And there are some examples that make it virally online where you see people actually getting out of their vehicle and acting this out. There's another example of that when people behave online behind the anonymity of a keyboard and they say and do things that they would never do face-to-face to somebody else. And the very worst of ourselves can come out in that perceived anonymity. So what do you do when your best is not only good enough, but in your trying the best, you actually undermine what it means to be human? Our culture can be dog-eat-dog and consumerism and buy and buy and buy and pursue and pursue and pursue, and you're doing your best, kind of falling into that rut of what culture says you should be doing and undermining things like gratitude and peace and things that maybe in a saner moment we might say, yeah, that is what it means to be human, but then we don't do it. We're just busy, busy, busy all the time. Our best efforts can undermine our meaning and our purpose. The root idea of what it means to be human in the Bible is the idea that every human being, regardless of who they are, is created in the image of God, which speaks to both identity and purpose. This is who you are, and the purpose that's tied along to that, that we don't talk about as much, is you have a responsibility to other human beings and to the world. That's what it means to be image of God. Some people would say that is at the root of our Western civilization, the idea that every human has innate value. And there's been a general strong move away from the idea that God even exists, but we still hold on to that as a core value, because without that, everything falls apart. What happens when the problems that we face as a culture exceed our ability to meet them, to deal with them, to solve them? I think right now the situation we have in Ontario, it's the three E's: our economy, our education, our environment. And everybody has differing ideas about how to deal with those. How do we do that? How do we solve our problems? And then how do I solve my problems that seem to be too big for me? Because I'm frail, I'm weak, and sometimes the worst comes out of me. The Bible says that is the Adam problem. It doesn't use those exact words, but that's the idea. That from the beginning, mankind, Adam, turned his back on God, and all of a sudden, this is what it means to be human. The Old Testament tells the story about God's solution. So there's this Adam problem that escalates. Things just get worse and worse and worse. And then God steps in, he says, I have a plan to restore the world. And he starts with a man named Abraham. He says, Abraham, because you are faithful to me, I am going to work with you and have you work with me, and your descendants will be, the word is, a blessing to the world. You will be a blessing to the world. You will enable the world. You will enable humanity to flourish. You will enable humanity to be at its best. And that's the whole purpose of God working with Israel. Israel is supposed to be the solution to the world. But there's a problem, because Israel continually fails in its mandate. Israel continually betrays God's purpose. Instead of being a blessing, they're a curse to themselves and those around them. I mean, I'm skimming over few thousand years of history here, like very, very quickly. But there's a bunch of agreements God has in place, and one of them is, I'm gonna plant you in the promised land to be a light to the world. Everybody can look at you and see how you're supposed to behave, and they continually betrayed that idea until God said, enough is enough, and he removed them, he exiled them from that land, and that was the end of that. Many years later, they came back in an unprecedented historical move where their conquerors and captors actually allowed them to return, but they still saw themselves as in prison in their homeland. They're still under the rule of these pagan overlords. Exile is the symbol of being expelled from God's presence, and that exile that they went through is actually almost a reenactment of Adam and Eve being expelled from the garden, banished from the garden. This is what happens when you betray God's purpose for you. Throughout the Old Testament, one of the phrases that is used to describe Israel is, Israel is God's son, God's chosen one. This is who Israel is. You are my son, you will be my representative in the world. And what you see is, in the New Testament, Jesus shows up, and all these New Testament writers are taking those God's son, child of God prophecies, the things that was expected of Israel, and they're applying them directly to Jesus. It happens in quite a few different ways. Jesus says to his disciples in John, he says, I am the true vine. Now, everybody in that culture would understand the vine is a representative of Israel. And Jesus isn't saying, I'm the vine. He's saying, I'm the true vine. I'm the true Israel, the Son of God, the true representation of God's purpose and plan. He chooses 12 followers. And I think everybody in that culture would understand what 12 means because there's 12 tribes in Israel. He's saying, we're starting the nation new. It's defined around him now. So Jesus becomes the representative of Israel, and in every way that Israel fails, Jesus becomes Israel's substitute. He becomes the solution for the solution. The solution's broken, he becomes the solution for Israel's problem, so that Israel, this whole new Israel, can be the solution for the world. Okay, that's all like way up here, heady. What do we do with that? Okay, so I want to narrow it down to a text that's it's right around the crucifixion text in the Bible. I'm looking at Luke's version in Luke chapter 23. If you have a paper or a digital version, I welcome you to read along with me. I'm reading out of the New Living Translation. I don't care what translation you read because they're all decent. Generally, they're all decent. So I'm reading from Luke 23, starting at verse 18. So this is, the context here is Jesus has been arrested. Okay, this person who has done all these great things, he's developed a following, he's developed, there's envy that comes out. People see him as a threat to power. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And so he's arrested and he's dragged in front of the Roman governor, the pagan governor, and they say, we want to do away with this guy. Okay? So a mighty roar rose from the crowd, and with one voice they shouted, kill him, Jesus, and release Barabbas to us. Barabbas was in prison for taking part in an insurrection in Jerusalem against the government and for murder. So the Mark and Matthew versions of this story tell us that there was a custom at the time where, as a favor to the people, at Passover, the Roman governor would release one prisoner of their choosing. So this is who they're calling for. They're calling for Barabbas. We want Barabbas. We don't want you to kill Barabbas. We want you to kill Jesus. So Barabbas was in prison for taking part in an insurrection in Jerusalem against the government and for murder. Pilate argued with them because he wanted to release Jesus. He doesn't see Jesus as a threat. But they kept shouting, crucify him, crucify him. For the third time he demanded, why? What crime has he committed? I have found no reason to sentence him to death, so I will have him flogged, and then I will release him. But the mob shouted louder and louder, demanding that Jesus be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate sentenced Jesus to die as they demanded. As they requested, he released Barabbas, the man in prison, for insurrection and murder, but he turned Jesus over to them to do as they wished. So here's a really enigmatic character, Barabbas. There's not a lot we know about him. The name Barabbas is in two parts. The ancient Aramaic or Hebrew word bar meant son of. And there's a few other son ofs in the Gospels. And you might recognize the word Abba or Abbas meaning father. The word Barabbas means son of the father. In Matthew's version, some of the later manuscripts say his name was Jesus Barabbas. So you have the Son of God, the Son of the Father, on one hand, and on the other hand, you have somebody who's called the Son of the Father. This is who they're choosing between. I've read some commentaries on this, and they comment on the irony about that they would choose a murderer instead of this nonviolent, messianic leader. And I think that's it's a little blind. Because of course they're going to choose this guy. He's an insurrectionist. He's a rebel. Against whom? Against Rome. That's the guy you want to follow. He's a hero. The heroes of their past were the people that rebelled against their overlords. One of the great festivals that they had every year that you don't find in the Old Testament is the festival of Hanukkah. So they were, the nation of Israel is under domination, subjugation of the Greek Empire, just like in Jesus' time is under the Roman Empire. Under the Greek Empire, their hero, Judas Maccabeus, rebelled against the Greeks, defeated them all, and he was the hero. And he, this is what heroes do. They defeat the enemies that have us in subjugation. That's what Barabbas was doing. He's an insurrectionist. He's rebelling against Rome. He's not rebelling against Jewish government. He's rebelling against Rome. And this is what we want. We identify with the son that we want. I see this a lot in North American Christianity. The drive for power, the drive to dominate your opponents, whether we see our opponents as immigrants or people of another religion, we want to dominate them. If you go to some of the southern states, somebody was telling me they saw a billboard that had Jesus on the billboard, and it said, "Pray for our troops and a bunch of tanks." Really? We associate Jesus with our violent domination of, or even self-defense. We associate him with powerful weapons. That's Barabbas. Part of us really wants that. We want to be on the winning side. We want to be at the winning team, and we'll crush our opponents. The exemplification of murderous rage and revenge. That's what we want. Look at our movies. How many times do you see a movie where the hero is one who dies? Right? In our movies, our heroes are the ones that dominate. Rambo. I'm really dating myself there. Okay? I don't know. The Expendables. I'm still dating myself because they're all really old. But those are our heroes. So we have a guy that's guilty of murder. And in Jewish culture, if you're guilty of murder, the penalty was death. And so here's a guy who's guilty of murder, but he's our hero because he's an insurrectionist against Rome. And Jesus, who has never killed anybody, dies the death of the murderer. He takes his place. That's what the people want. The natural consequence of evil is evil. Violence begets violence. And how do you solve that problem? See, I mentioned that hero of Hanukkah, Judas Maccabeus, and he and his family, they were underdogs. They overthrew the Greek Empire, the kind of like the descendants of Alexander the Great Empire. They're dominating the land. Judas Maccabeus, they overthrow them. They establish their own monarchy. And within 100 or 200 years, they were just as pagan and corrupt as the people that they overthrew. They were Jewish, sure, but they started adopting Greek names and they started suppressing the Jewish religion and all of that. They were just as corrupt as those that they replaced. Because violence begets violence, and the consequence of evil is evil. They didn't have the means to deal with that Adam problem within themselves. The natural consequence of stepping outside of God's highest intention, the Bible uses the word sin. I tend to be hesitant to use that word because people hear that word and they think, that means a list of things I'm not allowed to do for some arbitrary reason, I don't know why. And that's not what it is. It's the idea, there's actually two ideas. One idea is breaking God's law, which you see more in the Old Testament. There's a covenant, there's a set of agreement that God has with his people, and they're supposed to keep the terms of that agreement, and you're not supposed to break that. And to break that, there was one word they used that has been translated sin. But there's another word that it kind of comes from Greek culture, and I've mentioned this in the past couple of weeks. It's an inherent moral flaw. Okay, there's a flaw that we have that if it stays unchecked, it will lead to our destruction. That's the story of Achilles' heel, okay? He's got one little flaw that ends up leading to his destruction. And that the word sin is used to describe that. It's our little weakness. It's our mild addictions that unchecked become murderous intent. That's what it is. And it infects everything. No one's perfect. I mean, you might look at me and think I'm perfect, but just talk to my wife. She'll tell you that's not true. In fact, I think part of the purpose of marriage is to expose that and deal with it, okay? That's one reason why we do that. So when Jesus goes to his death, and here's where I want to zoom out a bit and look at, we have this little story that's in all four Gospels about Jesus and Barabbas, and the people choose Barabbas. Jesus goes to the death deserved by the murderer, and in that death, he deals with the flaw. He takes on the penalty for that flaw, even though he didn't have it himself, and he dealt with it and broke its power. He identified with Israel. In fact, he's living out the story of Israel. When he goes to his death, that's a reliving out. It's a retelling the story of the exile, where he's exiled from God's people. One theologian said this. He said, it was N.T. Wright, said, "What can be more exilic than the king being killed by the pagans outside the walls of his own capital city?" It's Jesus living out and dying out the exile of Israel, but God turns it around, because in that death, he breaks the power of the moral flaw. He brings about a new exodus, a new rescue from slavery, a return from exile. This is happening at Passover, that the festival that celebrated freedom from slavery. That whole forgiveness of sin, restoration of relationship with God, God choosing to live among humanity, all of that is wrapped up in the crucifixion, and it's rubber stamped with the resurrection. Jesus won, demonstrated the victory over death, by being both representative of Israel and substitute for flawed Israel, and being representative of Adam, all humanity, and substitute for Adam, with Adam, that flawed Adam nature that we all carry. I was interacting with somebody about this message, somebody at Cross and Church this past week, and they said, "I think it's important to point out that Jesus was not Plan B. It wasn't like God said, well, let's try the Israel thing and see if that works. From the very beginning, he knew that Israel would carry that the moral failure of Adam and need to be solved from the very beginning. The Bible says Jesus was crucified before the foundation of the world. That was the intent from the beginning. It was the end of July, 1941, in the Nazi death camp at Auschwitz in Poland. There was a prisoner that escaped. And so the camp commander, as a deterrent, chose 10 other prisoners and said, "We're going to starve these 10 guys to death so that nobody else tries to escape. Because if you do, more people are going to die." There was a prisoner in the camp at the time. His name was Maximilian Kolbe. There's a picture of him on the screen. And he was a Polish monk who, when the Germans invaded Poland in 1939, October, he did not leave the country like a great many other people did. He stayed there. He says, I have something to do here. When his town was taken over by the Nazis, he was arrested, and they held him for about 2 or 3 months, and then he was released. And while he was arrested, they gave him a document that they wanted him to sign, and it was a document that that would acknowledge his German heritage and give him all the privileges of a German citizen living in Poland, and he refused to sign it. In fact, he went back to the monastery living with all the other monks, and they did their best to rescue as many refugees as they can. They rescued something like 2,000 Jewish refugees, and while he was there, they had a printing press, and he was constantly printing and distributing propaganda or magazines or whatever that would undermine the Nazi regime, which is not a great way to survive in a country that's dominated by the Nazis. And so sooner or later, they caught up to him. And it was in 1941, a couple of years later, the monastery was shut down by the German authorities, and Maximilian Kolbe and four other monks were arrested. They were put in prison, and it was just a few months later that he was transferred to Auschwitz, the death camp. He was prisoner number 16670. So he was in the camp. He was watching. He saw this go on, where all the prisoners are lined up, and they say, "Somebody has escaped. We're going to choose 10 men, and we're going to kill them all." And one of the guys who was selected, one of the 10 men started, like, he was in despair. He was crying out. He's yelling, "My wife, my children, my wife, my children." And Maximilian Kolbe stepped forward and said, "I will take his place." And it was shortly after that he calmly accepted a lethal injection of carbolic acid and saved the life of the other man. That's a bit of an illustration of what Jesus did for us. We are all on a trajectory towards self-destruction and death, and Jesus took our place. I read the story of Barabbas. You know what? I am Barabbas. I have a moral flaw that I can dismiss, but unchecked, it turns into murderous intent. That Adam flaw. And on the cross, Jesus took my place. Jesus took your place. What does it mean to be only human? It means more than just we make mistakes from time to time. It means we've been separated from our basic created identity and our basic created purpose. And Jesus died so he could take our place so we can live back into that. I am invited, and each one of you, without exception, each one of us is invited to follow Jesus and be incorporated into that new Israel, God's solution for the world. That's God's purpose for us, to be a blessing to the world, to be a blessing to humanity, be a blessing for the world. And my identity is as part of God's family, chosen and loved as his son, just as you are chosen and loved to be his son or daughter. That's his purpose for you, to be a blessing to the world, your identity, your responsibility. I've heard somebody say recently that meaning and purpose come from responsibility. So we can yell and scream about our rights, but if you want meaning and purpose, it comes from responsibility. Well, this is the responsibility for which we were created, to be a blessing to the world and to place our trust in Jesus, our complete trust in him, is to step into that identity and to step into his life. So think about where you are right now. What's your place? We've talked over the past couple of weeks about the power battle, right? We've talked about about how shame dominates us. And maybe you're dealing with a whole bunch of other things. Suffering, pain. Maybe you feel like whatever I'm talking about right now, you're not good enough. Ding, correct. You're not. I'm not. We're not good enough on our own. We're not good enough on our own to deal with and solve the world's problems. In fact, many times, I'm not good enough on my own to deal with my own problems. Say anything about the rest of the world. But Jesus took my place. Jesus took your place, so you were invited into his purpose, into his identity. It doesn't mean that it's all sunshine and roses. It can be difficult, it can be painful, but it's worthwhile. Instead of all the other paths we follow, this is worthwhile. God's purpose to be blessing for the world. The early church demonstrated this, that every person that became part of the church, when it was running the way it should, there was full equality. People weren't separated by color or social status or by gender. Every person in diversity and unity, not conformity and unity, diversity and unity, living out God's purpose for the world. I don't have any text messages this morning for the second service, but I have one from the first service that I forgot to read. So I'm going to do this in the second service. If we are flawed, broken, or unworthy and have those feelings deeply within us, how does one accept God's love when one does not love oneself or is challenged with loving ourselves? How do you just feel, trust, and believe, or is that what faith ultimately is? That's a really tough question because faith is not faith does not mean suspension of disbelief. Faith does not mean, well, I don't really believe it, but I'm going to pretend I believe it until I do. Fake it till you make it and all of that. So how do you understand how do you believe down deep inside what God really thinks of you? And there's I talked about this last week. Part of it is learning to recognize his voice. One way we do that is by reading scripture because you learn to recognize what he sounds like. You go from there to actually listening to what he says. I think sometimes when we pray, we talk and talk and talk and talk to him, and that's fine. We don't stop to listen. See, he's wanting to say something to you, and we can't shut up long enough before we move on to the next thing in our life. And we have to listen and allow him to speak to us. And this is the voices that we allow into our heads from our culture, even our self-talk that undercut us and dominate us you know, the way you wouldn't talk to yourself if you saw yourself if you were five. You know, you tell yourself you suck all the time. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But that's not God's voice, and you need to stop and allow him to speak to you and tell you who you are. instead of us telling him who we are. And the more you do that, because it's a battle, you're battling your self-talk all the time. The more you do that, the more it begins to sink in. You understand who you are, God's child, with his responsibility to be a blessing to the world. I felt my phone vibrate. There's another one. So if Jesus took our death on himself, do we still have that fatal flaw? Okay, that's a great question, because here I am, I'm following Jesus, putting my trust in him, and I still feel like I have that all the time. And so what happens is when I put my trust in him, I that's the starting point to a new spiritual life. It's not the end point, it's the starting point. So what I deal with, what I struggle with, is all my old habits. I have to render them incapacitated, and that happens over time. So as I continue to move towards God's ideal, hand in hand with Jesus, trusting him, and we're going to do a message later on where we talk about that, I, over time, make my old way of living less and less influential in my life. And so, yeah, the fatal flaw is still there in your old identity. It's not there in your new identity. So I hope that explains it enough. If not, keep coming, because we're going to deal with that. So you may be here today and say, this is all really interesting. I've never been a follower of Jesus, and what you're saying sounds intriguing, and I want in. How do I get in? Well, we say this every week. It's as simple as ABC. A stands for admit your need for God. Admit that without him dealing with your fatal flaw, you're stuck. And so admit it. Sometimes that's difficult, to be honest with ourselves and say, I actually really need this. Second, believe that God has this available for you. Believe doesn't mean, in this sense, it doesn't mean like hold a particular opinion. It means extend trust. I trust enough. Like if I believe that Apple stock is going to triple tomorrow, if it's just an opinion, I don't do anything about it. If I actually trust it's really going to happen, I'll invest in it, right? This is the ultimate investment. And then C is commit. You can't continue to live the old life and live the new life at the same time. You have to take a step to say, okay, this is the starting point of my new spiritual life. I'm gonna jump into that. And there are still struggles over time because your old life keeps coming back like a zombie, right? Keeps telling you that's your real identity. It's not. Step into your new life. Commit completely. And I believe that there's something you have to actually do, because you can make a decision in your head and then it's gone. Something you have to actually do to jump into this. And the easiest mechanism that we have, or the simplest mechanism, is to get onto crossness.live, and there's a follow Jesus box. Click the follow Jesus box. Put in your contact information and we'll get a hold of you and help you in this entry point to a whole brand new life that can be beyond your imagination. I'm going to ask that you'd stand, and we're going to close the service. Once the service is done, we turn Theater One into a prayer room. And there are people here that need to, a couple of things. One is recommit to that life that Jesus has for you. Recommit to him, to living out the journey, the new identity, and the new purpose that he has for you. And maybe you need to wrestle with him. Maybe somebody here needs to wrestle with him in terms of actually taking that step and following him for the first time. Don't waste the opportunity. There's a reason why we do this. The kids program is going to run for the next 15 minutes, so if you have kids in there, you can spend some time here. Now, we also challenge people. We want to be a place that's welcoming. People belong, so we encourage people to find one person you've never met before and have a meaningful conversation with them. We just ask you to do that in the lobby so that people that are in here can really engage with God. Feel free to stick around in the lobby. You know, we don't kick people out immediately. This coming week, we have our Good Friday service, as Pastor Claudette said, 10:30, and we're going to be commemorating Jesus' death. And then next week, our Easter service is going to be an open house service. These are services that we intend to be aimed at those who don't know Jesus at all, right? This is your opportunity to invite a friend, family member, coworker. We just want to make a clear presentation. Today, my challenge for you is to recognize Jesus as your substitute and understand the freedom and responsibility that brings. And a specific challenge for this week is, what is one way that you can be a blessing to the world this week? I don't mean like, look at me, I'm God's blessing to the world. No, I mean in humility, how can you bless someone else and fulfill God's purpose for you this week. Put aside your own agendas and take on God's responsibility for you. Let me pray for you. Father, I thank you that you gave Jesus to be my substitute, and you gave Jesus to be a substitute for each one here, that there is a whole new life available to us. That when we struggle with our identity, we struggle with our responsibility, we struggle with our fatal flaws, that you welcome us into your family. And you have a new road, a new path, a new life for us to live, and that you lead us into that, you empower us to accomplish it. Father, I pray that you would make that an increasing reality to each one of us this week. In Jesus' name, amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.